It's your girl, Jess B.
And it's your girl, Vina Nung.
And you are now locked in with us, the Anti-Socialites.
So turn up the volume and just chill out.
Because each and every week,
we're coming with that real talk.
Conversations with Miami's business owners, artists, behind-the-scenes nightclub professionals.
As well as social activists, community leaders, and aspiring artists.
Real talk from two cool chicks curating Miami's cultures, arts, and lifestyles.
Miami, baby, baby.
What's up? You are tuned into the Anti-Socialites podcast. It's your girl, Jess B.
And it's your girl, Vina Nung.
And today we got producer, singer, song, I mean, not singer, songwriter, but all the songwriter, all that shit. DJ, KP.
Yeah, I got a note or two.
Let me hear something.
Start us off. I got a straight.
Oh, maybe we need to get you singing. Right. But what's up? You all the way from the A? You in Miami, 305?
You know it. 404 to 305.
Hey, and the weather's nice, so we showed you some hospitality.
The weather is very good. How's the weather in Atlanta?
Not so great.
Really?
No. When we left, it was cold. It was winter in Atlanta.
I think everywhere else in the world is kind of cold and chilly.
Yeah, we're kind of blessed down here.
Yeah, high five to us.
Yeah. Oh, y'all one season.
Right.
Don't know nothing about interchanging, taking your spring clothes out, putting your summer clothes in.
No, just hot and rainy, is it?
Don't have that vibe.
But what's up, though? You was out here for Rolling Loud.
I was. Rolling Loud and Cinco de Flyo.
Mm-hmm. Yes. He made a little, appearance in the camera, but Cinco de Flyo. I mean,
that was dope. That missed it, but I know
she wasn't there.
I saw the visuals. They FaceTimed me. It looked like it was litty.
No, it was dope. Like, we had a great time. It was a great turnout. The music was great. Hopefully, I know Fly set was dope. I listened to that. I don't know what my set sounded like until somebody looked at me in the face and go, or I. So
have you had a set before?
Absolutely.
And in the beginning now, because I know you were doing it, you started off as a DJ,
I started DJing first when I was in ninth grade, which is a very long time ago, but...
We can't tell.
Okay, I appreciate it. But I've been focused on the executive side of the music business for probably the last 20 years, so I haven't seriously DJed in probably over 15 years.
So what kicked... Or what made you get back into it?
Well, I've never not messed around. Like, I've always had turntables in my office. I've always, like, it's always been there. So, like, it'll be like the stress relief.
Gotcha.
So, I never really thought about it anything more than that for probably the last 15 years, right? So, I was on, Christmas break about 3 years ago. And a friend of mine, Pretty King, was at my house. And I was just at the house practicing. And he, you know, with his cell phone... He took a video, posted it on Instagram. It was like, yo, I just posted a video. And I was like, what video? He was like, oh, you over there doing your juice shit on your GQ. And literally about 30 minutes, I got my first offer to spend somewhere.
What?
Yeah, but it was just me doing tricks. It wasn't like a set. It was just me messing around. But then... Got an offer, and I knew I wasn't ready, so I was like, give me a couple months to just for real think about this, because I got to get records, I got to, you know, this is a thing, it's an undertaking. But I wanted to do it. It was fun. And first set I did was trash. It was horrible.
Was this at, like, a major club? Was it just a spot?
It was at a club. Actually, okay. Let me not say that. The first thing I did was okay, to the point where it was like, as an executive, it was great.
Okay.
Like, okay, man, I know you can really DJ. And I was like, oh, yeah, skin of my teeth. But then I came out of town. I had to do my, which is one of my managers now, Troy Ginyard, T Guns. He had a birthday weekend in Orlando. So I came down, and he had two spots. And I told him I need turntables because I have never used CDJs.
Mm.
The first club we got to, CDJs. So it took me a good 30 minutes to get a feel for it.
Yeah.
So for 30 minutes, it was horrible. It was just like a lot of, oh no, hold on, wait a minute, what does this do?
Yeah.
Like, legit horrible. Got it going cool enough to where, you know, people didn't like, they would give me the pat on the back, like, yeah. No.
Out of respect. It was like,
yeah. Yeah, yeah, no. And I was like, okay, so I know what I got to do. But I was like, the next night, I had another party. I was like, man, please, please, please give me turntables. Mm-hmm. And that was great. Mm-hmm. Like, but it was like the difference in one night was, it was day and night, for real. But I understood what my thing was. I knew what it wasn't, too.
Okay.
So, yeah, so after that, after the second night, I was like, okay, I can do this. I can enjoy this.
So have you been practicing your CDJ or networking on CDJ?
Nah.
You're just sticking to the turntables.
But you know what? Now, after being out doing stuff for the last 2 years, I'm just better. So when I get to a place where there's CDJs, I know what I can and can't do.
Okay.
So the problem is I was trying to treat the CDJs like turntables. So it's just like you can't treat the future like the past. So you just have to deal with it. It's different.
Yeah, and I know DJs now, I mean, there's been like controversy like, oh, you're not a real DJ if you don't know how to use turntables. But is there like a certain level of respect for those that adapted to the electronics getting a little different and people using Serato and all that? Or is it just like, nah, you need to know turntables?
I think you need to know your craft. Mm-hmm. If you're a DJ, that's a part of it. Like, right. The same way I had to learn CDJs, I had to figure out what I could do with them. Mm-hmm. You know, it's if you go to a game and it's nothing but dumps, that's not fun to watch.
True.
So it's like, if you can't necessarily be considered one of the greatest if you don't know how to use the fundamentals as well as the tricks.
I agree. I feel you.
I have nothing to say.
But there, knowing your past and your history, I think early last year, Organized Noise put out a documentary.
Yes.
You weren't in it, though.
You know, I wasn't in town, honestly, but I was in it. Actually, there was a picture of me that flew through it.
Yeah, yeah. They mentioned, you were honorably mentioned, a little mm-hmm. comment, but...
I would say intricately mentioned.
Yeah, for sure. You got a big part in it, but... like, tell us about the beginning and stuff. I heard, like, you were at somebody's house and you left a CD and it was had a Big Boy on it or Rico's Beats on it and Big Boy found the CD.
Well, okay, so this is funny. Me, Big and Dre went to the same high school. Mm. So this is where cheating goes good. I left.
I was going to leave all that out.
I left a Beat CD in somebody's car. Mm-hmm. And luckily enough, Big Boy got in that same car and heard the Beats. Like, what's this? And, you know, it made the connection. So it was a cassette tape of Organized Noise beats. Mm. And
a cassette tape.
Yeah, so it just caught, you know, the cassette traveled. And it made its way to Big Boy and Dre. They wrote some stuff to it. Came to Rico's job like a week or two later and performed raps that they had wrote to it.
Wow.
So it kind of, you know, that was, it's like the serendipity of it all, you know? Mm-hmm. It's like, I really believe in just the magic of how things happen. Or it's really the plan. You know, some people digest it better when it's magic, but mm-hmm. that's fine.
Yeah, and back then
on just Sunday morning.
Right, and it just seemed like, you know, the story of how everyone kind of got together was so organic, and the Dungeon family and all that, like, literally y'all were, like, in a basement making, like, great music and wasn't thinking nothing of, like, we got to be the biggest star. Like, it would just happen, or not money or anything like that. I mean, I'm sure that was a goal, but, like, tell us more about, like, the process and how it felt to just be a part of that.
Well, it's hard. Well, it's easy to talk about it now because you can look back in hindsight, 2020 thing. But at the time, there was no money in it. Mm-hmm. Like, there wasn't a music industry in Atlanta at the time that we were in the basement making music.
Right.
We were just trying to impress each other. And I think that goes just into that whole thing of whoever your circle is who you'll be. Mm-hmm. So we happened to be in a room full of, well, basement full of people who were hungry, were talented, you know, like, really driven to be dope at their part. So everybody, you know, it's, like, literally about 12, 13 people packed into this basement that could probably comfortably fit about 3-4 people.
Damn, sweaty. I heard it was sweaty.
It was sweaty. It was musty.
It was a lot of different things.
It was, like, weed, dirt, and music.
But his mom, like, took care of y'all at the same time.
Well, we all took care of each other. His mom tolerated us.
Gotcha.
That was enough. Like, literally, because that's the job. The job was tolerating 13 dudes in the house full of you and your two daughters. But what they got was, but, you know, you know, Rico's sisters got security from it. They got 12, 13 security guards.
And Big Brothers, probably.
Real life, like, yeah, to this day. So it's, again, it's just, it's that family that you make, you know, hence Dungeon Family.
Who also makes amazing, great music.
Appreciate that. Thank you.
So, like, after, you know, you're heavy in the game and stuff, you started A&R and being an exec, like, LaFace, you signed T.I., you signed, what's the other group?
Young Bloods.
Like, what was your mentality? Was it about the business? Like, what, like, because going from a DJ then to working, you know, records and all that, signing an artist, especially T.I., to where he's become, like, what was your mentality?
You know, I think my mentality then is the same as it is now. It's like, if you see something dope, you want to put a light on it. Well, that's how I feel. Like, how do I get other people to feel like I feel now that I've heard this, seen this, or, you know, just been in it?
Mm-hmm.
That's the mentality. It's like, I saw somebody who I thought was really dope, who I didn't necessarily see someone else helping.
Okay.
Because it's, you know, it's kind of, in my being in the music business, I've learned that let me start from here. I came in thinking one way. I came in thinking that dope stuff is what works, and everything that I've heard was because it was so dope.
Mm.
As I got into the music industry, you find out that it's about champions. It's about teams. It's about who introduces you. And at the time that I started building my credit in the A&R space, you know, I signed T.I. after doing Usher, after working on TLC, Toni Braxton, and Outkast and Goody Mob.
Mm-hmm.
So my credit was good enough to bring in this young kid who nobody knew. He didn't have a buzz. It wasn't that. It was just, I met a dude through DJ Toomp and Jason Jeter, you know, just based on being working at a certain studio, mm-hmm. a studio called Patchwork in Atlanta. And I don't know, I'm just real big on, if I like it, I want other people to know about it.
Mm.
So it was never, yeah, sharing is caring.
Yeah.
You gotta share, especially music. I mean,
it's too many choices. It's like, and to an extent, even if you look at it from an ego space, I think my taste has kind of, it falls in line with people like me. And I want people like me to, like, if someone else like me hears something like T.I., I want them to tell me. I want to hear it too. So it's just keeping it as unselfish as possible, but at the same time, understanding that, you know, from the ego space, this is my taste. And it helps me to navigate, you know, if I make sure that everybody I introduce to you is at least fundamentally dope, it keeps my credit good.
So with T.I., that was how many years ago? We're not even going to go into years, but right now you're still...
At least 17.
17. You still, like, you have Cap G, mm-hmm. which the first time I heard him was, I heard Girlfriend, mm-hmm. and I was just like, man, this song is... And then I seen him, I'm like, where did you find him at? Like, how did you come across him? Because it's
internet.
Brand new, but it's working. It's like, he's working, and he's working hard. You said the internet?
The internet. It's like, the internet makes it easier. Like, if you follow the rabbit hole of, again, your taste, it'll lead you to things that you like.
You, JD, and Rico Love all follow this pattern right now of finding dope artists on the internet. Do you look for them, or does somebody tag mm-hmm. you? Or
No. The internet is real life now. But, oh, by the way, no, in Cap G's case, in the last probably 4 or 5 years, I've probably gone through a major, I don't know, transition, whatever, in my life, right? So I just opened up, and I was working out. We had a crew of people that we used to go to the park and just run and just do random workouts with my homeboy Pretty Ken again. And one of the guys who was working out with us sent this video to me and Ken, like, yo, y'all should check this because y'all in the music business. And it was Cap G.
Gotcha.
So the ironic part was, I saw Cap in the apartments that I grew up fighting in. And I was like, what is he? Like, legit, that was just, you know, my honest question was, what is he? And they're like, no, he's Mexican, his family, you know. And I was just, they went through the story, and I was like, well, why is he there? Like, that's where I grew up. Like, I've never seen anything other than black people in this neighborhood. And, you know, again, it's, Cap is 20 years younger than me. Actually, give or take. But we went to the same high school, graduated 20 years apart. He went to the same high school, me, Big, Dre, Candy, Kenan from Saturday Night Live. It's like so many people that came out of our high school that it's almost like I had to pay attention to it. And he lived in the neighborhood I grew up in. So it was just the irony of it made me investigate it. And when I met him, I realized he was born in Atlanta. His family is from, his mother and father are from Mexico. His brother, a couple's brothers born in Mexico, a couple born in California. He's the only child in that house that was born in Atlanta. Mm. So it's the anomaly of circumstance. It's he was born in Grady Hospital in Atlanta, grew up in College Park Projects. And when you think about being foreign in any situation, the amount of confidence, the thick skin, the things that you have to grow into,
right.
It built him for this. Because especially if you're talking about the internet age of people who talk about bad everything. First. Like before everything. They even are committed to not liking, it's just how much funny shit can I say or how
it's
mean
so
can I
mean.
Be?
Like, at the end of the day, people are mean
trolls.
As fuck.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But
and they're like, that's a job now to be a troll.
Yeah. If people are looking for trolls, yeah. I mean, yeah, people are looking for everything. But I think his upbringing built him to be able to walk through this with the confidence and with the quiet confidence that he has. It's like, you know what? It's been worse. Like, if they're talking about you, they're talking about you.
Right.
So it's still fine.
Okay. I was just trying to figure out where did that connection come from. But it's really connected.
Like, it sounds like so many connections. And it, again, which goes into that thing, it's like, you don't know, man. Like, the idea of, like, not liking somebody for a reason, skin, religion, ethnicity. I'm spell correct on myself. But no, it's those things that we think make us so different. But when you look at the basics of it, we're not that different. Me and Cap, we have a parallel situation, but it's his specific situation or his specific cultures. Because he has now two that he lives in. He lives in his Mexican-American culture, and he lives in his Atlanta culture. So you put those together, and it's like, it's just new. It's just different, and it's, you know, it's from Atlanta, so it's fly.
Yeah. I love Atlanta. I mean, it's always been a city, for me, at least, to go. I went to college in South Carolina, so we used to always go, like, to Atlanta for spring break or whatever. Mm-hmm. But it's just, it was great to see, like, Atlanta grow from not being known as a powerhouse in hip hop to now being like damn near the Mecca, like aside from, you know, New York isn't really like pushing out artists consistently like Atlanta is. Tell us about you being kind of responsible and in that transition of Atlanta, just like, cause I mean, year 2000, like everything was really like heavy Atlanta. And to this day, like the top artists, Future, Young Thug, like everybody's repping. Like, why do you think that was?
I don't know. I think it's the Motown effect. It's like Motown didn't necessarily, Detroit wasn't the music spot until enough dope people did it in that spot that made it seem like, okay, scientifically it must be something there. Mm-hmm. So that's when people migrate and, you know, just start setting up shop. But Atlanta has so many talented people that it's still working. Like I wish I could explain it other than, you know, just I'm going to take the Atlanta line and say, you know, it just Atlanta's dope. Mm-hmm. You know, it's in the water. It's all those things. It's proximity. It's the idea that you can see people walking down the street who are famous and have affected culture, but they're still regular people. Mm. So it's inspiring to a younger generation of people who can figure out their lane and figure out how they want to become stars or just good at what they do.
What role does, like, the DJs in Atlanta play in a star's success? Because it seems that Atlanta, everybody works together, or, like, once somebody's hot, like, it takes off, and it takes off completely, as opposed to some other cities like Miami. Like, it's such a difference, and it's really hard for everybody to come together and push one artist. Like, y'all been able to push, like, multiple artists, like you just said, but I feel like the DJs and the people behind the scenes also, like, co-sign it, so it makes it a little bit easier.
I think we take our credit serious in Atlanta. So, like, there'll always be things that you're not. Oh, well, you know, we understand that we are stronger as a whole. First of all, so it just like you can look at Atlanta and say everybody messes with each other, right? You can. It looks like that, but we know that. We know that none of us are going to be hot 100% of the time. So if you make sure that the hottest people around you get light, it keeps the light in the same space. Like, you don't have to hog it. Like, the light's going to be there every day. Every day the light comes on. Like, so if you got it, you got to figure out a way to keep it. Because it moves. It normally moves way more than it does for, you know, it's moved less for Atlanta than it has for a lot of the other situations, like New York. Because it started it, we were able to watch it, look at it, and find our voice in it, right? But we also understood that we like New York. We like L.A. We don't have a selfishness, or we don't have a real arrogance that it can't be anywhere else. We're still hungry for it because we know we don't normally get it.
That's right there, the hungry part. Like, mm-hmm. It's not the entitlement. It's not the, oh, we started it, so it's ours. Can't nobody else have it, which I think New York kind of has. And that's why, like, it's really hard because you guys have the sound right now. Like, but it's the Atlanta sound.
I think it's more the Atlanta spirit and the sound, because it's still the same drums. It's still 808s. Rick Rubin used those in the late 80s and 90s. It's the same fundamental thought, but the personality is a personality. It's a humbling thing to be from Atlanta, there not be a music industry. You sit around in a room with your friends in a basement, and some music happens, and a couple of years later, there's a music business in Atlanta. You know, and organically, you know, however, I don't know how you look at it, but it's like, I 1,000% feel like, you know, God put the right people in a space, you know, Atlanta, not just the dungeon, but in a space to create something that matters to people. And I think, you know, that's the other part about the South in general. It's about heart. Mm-hmm. So it's much easier, if you're honest and come from your heart, to connect with other people whose heart is open. Because most of the people who listen to music are looking for something. They're not just listening to beats. Like, the majority of people are looking for some kind of inspiration, something to be amazed by, something to be able to say, I wish I could do that. You know, it's something to it. It's not just music. Like, people don't go to basketball games just to see the ball go in the hoop. They want to see it done in a way that they wouldn't have thought it was going to happen.
And Atlanta has been known to reach out to other cultures because Lil Jon kind of helped revive Too Short's career. E-40 came over and started doing stuff. So it was like, and it made sense and it didn't sound forced. And so y'all have that Southern hospitality where it's not just, I'm going to stick to Atlanta and that's it. Like, y'all still reach out to other artists and affect it.
I think the cheat code is we had the civil rights movement. Like, the cheat code is we understand that numbers matter. Like, the more people you have touching and agreeing on something makes it bigger. You know, I was tripping last night at the Rolling Loud show when Killer Mike stopped his hip-hop show to tell people how to vet their politicians. Mm. You know, it's like, it's a real thing. It's not like, that's not a gimmick. You can't make that a gimmick.
Right.
Because at a point, somebody's going to ask you something. And then that's when, if you're true to it, you end up on CNN being intelligent and stating your case, and people then open up to the rest of you outside of your hip-hop thought.
That's so true.
So it's like, I think everybody's, well, Atlanta, we're really big on being 100% person, like, be a 360 human being, right, while you're being an artist. That's the dope shit.
Mm-hmm. Down-to-earth-ass city. But what's going on with the infrastructure? Because y'all got, like, bridges collapsing.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
I do music.
You're like, I'm not focused on it.
We just want you to get where you got to go safely.
Like, it's just too much stuff popping right now. I'm like, okay.
No, but ironically, the bridge went out on my birthday.
Y'all had just passed that area.
No, my girlfriend was at the bridge where it collapsed, like, getting her hair done under that bridge.
Are you serious?
And sent me a text like, something's on fire. Like, so understand that the bridge collapsed or fire,
whatever happened
on my birthday. Now, for me, I'm having a birthday party that night. The bridge goes out. There's a torrential rainstorm. And all I'm thinking is, yeah, it's a wrap for this birthday party.
Right.
And again, it goes to that spirit of Atlanta. Like, it was lit.
People still came out.
Like, all this shit happening, I need to turn
it. I need something else. I need something else in my life.
Yeah.
You know, and it's, again, it's the quality of friends, too. But that's the thing. It's, Yeah, I do music. I do music, and them bridges gonna fuck up my friendship.
Do you feel like you could? Do you feel like you could ever live in another city?
I've lived in like I've had places in other cities. Mm-hmm. I just like Atlanta. I feel like my home base for not just I mean obviously my family, but my energy is not the same other places. Like I lived in New York, and what I did get, I got a lot done from a business standpoint, mm-hmm. but there was like. You know, just soulful things that you miss.
Yeah.
I lived in L.A., and I love the weather, but the first Christmas I had on shorts threw me off.
Okay.
We had Christmas on the beach. You know, we have Christmas barbecues around here.
Yeah, but see, that's the thing, but I'm from Atlanta, so it's almost like throwing off your equilibrium a little bit.
Yeah.
So it's like the relatability of one perfect season throws off the idea that there are struggles for me. So I like being in touch with what's happening in a way that I can feel it. And, you know, you can get out of touch. And again, that's only because I'm from Atlanta and I'm used to getting my information and, you know, at certain places, in certain situations, from people I trust and believe. When you're out of your element, you can find yourself not believing, not knowing what to believe. Because you don't know the signs. Like,
how are you creatively in LA? Like, what was that space?
I don't know that I was creative in LA as much as I was opening myself up to learn. Like, I wasn't as creative in LA. Okay. But I had to be on a different kind of attentive look. I had to be on my pivot. LA is different. And this was LA early 2000s, late 90s. So it was still, like, looming tensions and not being from there. You have to walk a little lighter.
Oh.
So it's like again, it's like I wasn't carefree. I wasn't normally myself, where I'm just, you know, childish and open.
Yeah, no, LA is a whole nother beast. And if it was around that time, then
why do people seem to go to LA to create their sound
projects?
Yeah, but I don't know that that's true. I think that people start getting hot, and then their first trip to LA. LA is a different place. You go out there, and if you go out there the week that your record is hot, every single person will offer you a check. They'll say, oh my God, we've been waiting for you to come out here, man. If you just lived out here, man, you get all the money. And then you move, and that hit record that generates, you know, a lot of money, you end up spending on staying in LA hoping to get another check. But reality is, be hot, the money will come to you. Like, Atlanta has maintained so much because so many of the more important, culturally important people live there. They still are there. So you have to come to Atlanta. Mm. If in the early 90s, if OutKast had moved to LA, it would change hip-hop.
That makes total sense.
Because the South wouldn't have as much to say, like... And gotcha. That started a trend in people being proud of the place that they're from in the South in hip-hop.
Mm.
Like, in hip-hop, that's kind of like New York could have been likened to, you know, it's civil rights. It's like, you know, you over there can't be over here with us. So in saying that, it made us create our own space, which was still inclusive of the people who told us we weren't necessarily good enough.
Right.
But it's inclusive in a way that, how about now?
Mm-hmm.
Got you.
I feel you.
I know I love this guy. I'm pretty sure you do too, but you have a relationship with Pharrell. Mm-hmm. What is We Are Other?
I am Other.
I am Other.
Collective.
I am Other. Collective. Like, what's your role in it and how?
I'm head of music at I Am Other.
So how does that
I know it's weird because Pharrell being and it's, Pharrell, like, naturally he's, I guess,
and head of music. He releases that and just... And you have control over.
I mean, control is fake. I have influence.
Better term.
Yeah, in what we do, but we all do. Like head of music is just you need a title because people need to say you have a title, but realistically, it's a lot of dope people together sitting in rooms, think tanking on how to get odd things in front of masses, and you know, odd dope things though. You know, and it's just easier because we all have kind of come from odd. So other being different.
Not like anybody else.
Yeah, not conventional. You know, but at the same time, I Am Other has a thread of oddness, which makes it the same. I don't know. It's
not just music.
No, it's not just music. It's film. It's TV. It's furniture. It's clothing. You know, it's furniture? All the... Yeah, Pharrell makes furniture. Yeah, you got to sit somewhere. chair. And it might as well be fly. Like, why not be in a fly chair? Yeah. It's just a collective of creative people, you know, trying to get that out into the world.
So how did that come about?
Because Pharrell attracts creative people. Like, he's a creative spirit, and he's such a big light of creative spirit, it attracts other people, like, who respect quality creative. And it came together, honestly, on some... I can't say that, actually, but...
Come on.
No, it came together, it's just, again, organic. We did... Me and Pharrell worked together since T.I.'s first album. Like, he did T.I.'s first single. I'm serious.
Yeah.
So, we've been friends since the day we met. Like super fast friends. And him being an Aries, I'm an Aries. We get along just because Aries feel good about other Aries. And the trust happened fast because we were honest with each other all the time. Like you'd be surprised at the petty creative conversations that we have on a Saturday at 9:45, like in the middle of him doing Pharrell shit, in the middle of me doing what I'm doing in my life, but because we care about how dope things are, or care about how dope things could have been if somebody would have made one turn, you know, one different choice in t-shirt for him, you know, and for me, that sound threw me off. But the idea of that caring is what our whole crew of people are. It's a bunch of people care about the detail. And that's what I Am Other's kind of about, coaching creative people to get to that next space. Mm. Because, you know, the other part about being creative is you see it so clearly.
But when others you might not.
But others might not. So you want to be able to create and say it again.
What? The Kanye theory.
I mean, no, but yeah, you want to create other stuff that you can make sense.
Right.
Like, you want to be able to explain why.
Because if the masses don't, like, understand, or if it doesn't translate at all.
You didn't communicate it
well. Then it doesn't matter.
It means you didn't communicate it. Mm-hmm. Like, communication is about the other person understanding what you're saying.
Exactly. And knowing your target, because if you don't even know, then you're just shooting your shot, and you're like, oh, I hope somebody likes it.
Yeah, you might as well go in the gym, turn the lights off, go for it.
Right.
Go for what you know.
With the internet kind of changing everything, music, how people market stuff, does it make it harder to just stay on track? Like, we tend to, like, overthink things sometimes when we think, like, oh, we may have to do it that way, but with I Am Other and just with what you do in general, do you feel like your process is a little different or a little skewed now because of the way things are targeted and marketed to people?
I think I have been in situations where too much information has thrown me off my game. So I think the internet is good if you know what you're using it for. Mm. But just like the rabbit hole of, I know I'm looking for music that feels a certain way, right? If you don't have a goal, that rabbit hole gets bigger. And it means you can end up in places you weren't necessarily looking to be in.
Right.
Like, you know, you can start at happy and end up anywhere. You can start at cat, kitten, and end up anywhere. Mm. It's, if you don't know what the goal is for you, the internet is the most dangerous place in the world. It's like walking around New York looking up at the buildings. Mm-hmm. And just getting pickpocketed.
Right.
Not paying attention.
Yeah, but if I know where I'm going, I can look at the internet as the tool that it is. Mm. It's so much information.
Yeah.
And I'm amazed at how much information people don't have based on how much is available at their fingertips.
Right. And even, like, on the business side, like, artists now have to consider, like, streaming. Mm-hmm. When before, that wasn't really on your mind, or no one's thinking about that.
How it works.
Like, that's important.
I mean, and the thing is, nobody still knows how radio works. Like, in real life, if you're not in radio. So, again, it's just another medium. You need to figure out the part that works for you. Like, and honestly, it's all specific. It's all tailored to what it is you're trying to do. Like, when me and Fly talk about stuff, we have similar tastes and we have similar thoughts, but we're going to do certain things different. And the internet has to be used the same way. You have to really have a real, what's the word? Just a base of where you're coming from. Mm. So you know that when you get into murky places, this doesn't feel
it's
right.
It's not for you.
Yeah, it's not for you.
That totally makes sense. Well, what, you know, tell us what you're listening to now. Like, who are you checking? Like, what album?
What is a KP playlist?
is schizophrenic. It can be, you know, I Got Issues, or it could be Ain't Gonna Let Up by Yola the Great. It's Stevie Wonder. Okay. It's Uzi. It's Lil Uzi Vert.
Philly.
I love dope shit. It doesn't matter. Like, and yes, he's from Philly. It's amazing how much Atlanta's in their music. Anyway, but No. But listen, I say that to say, it takes all of it. Like, when you asked earlier about, like, it's no hesitation in reaching out to somebody dope, no matter where they're from. But, you know, everybody doesn't do that. So I guess that's what makes Atlanta special. We're really a community of
givers.
Of givers. And we're very clear about what we're supposed to receive, though, too. Mm-hmm. You know, we're learning, you know, again, it's a new, it's new. The industry is new to Atlanta. It's like 20 years old. It's legit just about to be out of college. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, like, I know this for a fact because my son is in college. But, my first son, I'm sorry. I'm my oldest. But, it's the learning curve, and we're figuring out how to include more so that it becomes more. Mm. You know, so having a Uzi as an ally is amazing when you look at how far his reach is.
Right.
Like, I love playing the Uzi Vert record. Like, I love it because, you know, I've had conversations with people, you know, who are older, and like, I don't like this young stuff. I don't, like, what's the Uzi Vert? What's up with the purple hair? And I'm like, he's an artist. Like, he's expressing himself. And if you listen, he's actually a writer. Like, he's really writing records. Like, when you think about Tour Life, the song, it's really deep. I asked her, she said, push me to the edge, all my friends are dead. Like, it's like, it's so many real thoughts. And so when you see people emotionally react to records, it's incredible. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't matter if you're from Atlanta. It doesn't matter. Just be dope. Right. Like, be great.
As you were speaking, it just, and you were saying how, like, I mean, like, how they feel and what they saying is coming out in their music. At first, I'm not going to say I was against it. I just vibed to the new music. But then I'm thinking about, like, a 21 Savage. Like, what he's saying is, like, real. It's real shit coming out of his mouth that is, like, really how he's feeling. So when you said what
I love 21 Savage.
It's just like, okay, now I understand it. Even Lil Uzi Vert, like, he took a huge chance being who he was, mm-hmm. being from Philly, mm-hmm. and living this rock star lifestyle because it in Philly, that's not even accepted. Like, yep. It's not a thing. Good thing he had Drum, like, backing him up, who was also from Philly.
But who also lived in Atlanta.
I know, but he went to school there, and he just never left.
See how that worked?
Because he's DJing. You know, it works. I'm not mad at it. Everybody, no, a lot of people from Philly moved to Atlanta. I'm not even going to put it out there.
I'm not going
to
make this Atlanta versus Philly thing, because it's not. It's, you know, Philly has Philadelphia International. Like, it is, again, another staple in Black cultural art and music.
But y'all made the music scene work for y'all. We still struggling.
No, but again, when Philly International was popping, there wasn't as much information. Like, I look at Gamble and Huff, and I know how much they did during their time as popular producers.
Yeah.
They weren't just producers. They were helpful in the city. They were helpful in the community. They bought real estate. They understood how to make things around them better. Mm-hmm. And they took that same thing that they had in that studio with that shag carpet and all the things and all the people, Teddy Pendergrass, you know, Whitehead. It's like so many talented people that came through there, and they understood what that community did in that small space, and they took that outside and built it. But the information wasn't as free flowing. It wasn't the internet. So the next people who were starting up a company, didn't have necessarily access to ask how do you do it. Atlanta, we benefited from a lot of things happening at the same time. We had the struggle of trying to and gain respect. We had, we were from the South, so it's already that slow connotation. Yeah, I was about
to say that y'all slow or whatever.
Yeah, and we had to be aware of that and carry ourselves in a way that got us through those hurdles, but while being ourselves. Like, so, it's courtesy up until it's not. It's respect up until it's not. It, you know, it's still, you know, grown human beings who are very aware. So, we made it clear that it wasn't going to be, you're not getting jokes over on us. You know, you're not, because you said it fast, we heard it the same. Mm-hmm. It's how you deal with it. And I think if Atlanta can do one thing for the music business or just culture in general, it's about showing what you can do when you do it together.
And that kind of ties into your whole Be Great thing.
Yeah.
Because your hashtag Be Great, that's associated with your brand. But, like, what you're talking about is meaning, like, no matter how you do it, always be great in anything. Yeah. Like, what made you, like, push that? I mean, that's a mentality, obviously, but tell us.
Well, it's a mentality I didn't know I had. Mm. Like, I just, all my friends are dope. Like, on some level.
You are who you surround yourself
with. Yeah, so, you know, and I say this a lot, my grandfather told me this when I was about 13 and not understanding what it meant. But, you know, it's that grown man cold talk that he was doing. He was like, yo, man, like, I had got into some trouble and, you know, made it through it. But, like, a couple days later, he just walked into my room and was like, hey, man, I just need you to know, if you wake up in a room full of junkies, you're a junkie. And walked out the room, and I was like, I'm gonna fuck you mean? Mm. But as I grew and started paying attention to who my friends were, I'm like, oh, but if I'm in a room full of talent, I might be talented. So, okay, and if I'm willing, like, accepted in that room, that means I'm talented. But, yeah, it's understanding that you are who you surround. If you're in a circle full of squares, either you're waffle or you a square.
You ain't nothing but a slice of bread.
For real. That's awesome, though.
Baloney.
Yeah, but... nah, but I think it's something that, you know, people need to understand, especially, you know, you get so many overnight success stories that really aren't overnight. I mean, the public thinks they are, mm-hmm. but there are some people that did get some overnight and now they're gone. But you see, even like Access Now, like Vice, I don't know if you watch Vice, the channel.
I watch it from time to time.
What I like that they're doing is like, I can really watch a Noisy documentary and understand like, oh, so they've been doing music for way longer than I thought mm-hmm. and get to know, like, I got a little bit more respect for Lil Yachty after watching that just because of finding out his background. I was like, okay, I won't judge him as hard as I was. So it's like the Be Great thing and just, you know, seeing that the internet can either make or break you, but you got to use it the right way. Like mm-hmm. you said, don't fall for stuff. Yeah. Like,
but being great is really like the funny part is I could say that all day long, but if you're not trying to be, you won't even notice it.
Right.
Like, it's really like a beacon for, you know, it's like you put it in the air and people who are looking for that will gravitate and you'll form communities of it. Mm-hmm. Like, the Be Great as a movement, it's just what I want. It's like, I would love to see people try to be the best.
Yeah.
Like that's what I'm trying to do. It's really not that deep. It's as short as the saying almost. And I feel like it's something that you don't have to like me to want to be great. Like mm-hmm. so it makes it bigger than me. It takes the personal out of it. Like, you know, we talked, me and Fly talked last night, and we were talking about the t-shirts, the Be Great t-shirts, and, you know, we gave some out at the concert, and they went over well, and people wanted them. But they wanted them because it identified with them. Mm-hmm. Like, it probably had less to do with me, and I think the quality of a great show that me and Fly put on last night. But that thought mm-hmm. is the point.
Yeah.
And, you know, we were having fun while we were doing it, giving the shirts out, so that's infectious. But Be Great. It doesn't have to, like, that carries from DJing, it carries to being a father. It's like, everything that you got to work on, if you set the goal, you can at least get to it faster. Like, the name KP the Great happened by mistake because, ironically, it used to be my MySpace name back when MySpace was popping.
Yes, top 8 friends.
But again, that account closed. I never looked back at it, right? And that at that point, it was about Eric. It was like, KP the Great.
Mm-hmm.
But as I grew up, I was like, that's corny, blah, blah, blah. So I remember changing all my socials one day from all the different random things that they were. Mm-hmm. When I turned 40 years old, I changed everything to my government name. Mm-hmm. I'm like, this is who I am. But that's when things started changing. That's that transition space, right? 2 or 3 years later in Orlando at a radio interview, they had asked me to do a DJ set. And they were like, what's your DJ name? I'm like, KP.
DJ KP. DJ, okay.
So, but at the end of the set, dude was like, man, nah, that was KP the Great. That's what these guys need to be, KP the Great. And I was like, you know, he's like, your legacy, your network, everything about you is kind of like great.
Yeah.
That should be your name. I was like, bet. So DJ D Strong in Orlando was the person who said that. And I was like, you know what? Yeah, it's a name I can grow into. Right. I like it.
Yeah.
It's like that won't ever get too small or too tight for me. Like, there'll always be room to do better. I thought that worked for the mentality and the space that I'm in. And that led to the idea of, yeah, you're right, be great at it. Like, because me and T.I., when he was coming up, I remember him saying to me, he's like, man, yeah, I want to be the king of the South. And I was like, well, say it. And then that way you know you have a goal. And he did,
And he has not stopped saying it.
No, because you know what? Because that it creates accountability.
And it forces you to be consistent. Like, you can't drop the ball because then you just went against what you said you were doing.
You said king, right?
Yeah.
And he's matured into a totally different person from...
Yeah. Like, what I say, what he's always been is honest.
He's speaking out to everybody.
And to everybody about what he feels. And it's like, it's the thing that got him in that space. So why stop? But use it, you know, and he's using it.
Yeah, he went on a funk flex the other day.
I missed that one.
It's kind of funny.
He's a hilarious dude.
He does it so well, though. It's not like a rant that's like that sounds bad. It's like an educator rant. Like, yeah. He's spitting knowledge at the same time. Like, maybe you should get your shit together just a little bit.
Yeah. And the thing is, he does self-checking and, you know, he's grown as a human being.
Did you ever have to check T.I.?
Check is just such a weird word. But because he's my friend, I can talk to him in a very honest and open forum and get a point across. And he's an intelligent dude. The parts that make sense to him, he uses. The part that doesn't, he, you know, that shit goes out the other ear. So it's, you know, he checks himself more than anybody. Like, he's the person to call you immediately following something that doesn't make sense and go, hey, I know it's 5 in the morning. Tomorrow you're going to wake up and this is going to be on TV. I need you to understand that this is what happened.
That's just like it. I know what you sound like. Yeah, that's dope. Like, well, before we let you go, just we want to ask, I mean, you've been dropping jewels all episode, but we like to inspire people to kind of like follow their dreams. If somebody's stuck in a place in their life where they don't know, should I go, should I take this risk, like, what would you say to people that are just trying to like make decisions on, you know, to follow a dream or like a passion that may not be so easy to do?
Listen, man, do the work, prepare yourself, and when the opportunity presents itself, you'll be ready to take advantage of it. But you can't expect things to happen for you because you want them to if you're not doing the work. Everything else, God got it.
Okay. Well, where can people follow you? Your social medias, your website, all of that?
All of my socials are Kawan Prather. Okay. At Kawan Prather. KawanPrather. But if you type in KP the Great, it goes to it as well.
Okay.
My website is kpthegreat.com or kawanprather.com, and that takes you to everything for real.
Okay. All right. Well, you already know each and every week we drop in the coolest podcast. It's your girl Just V.
And it's your girl Vina Nun.
And KP the Great.
And we out. Yes.